Hello, everybody, all my accent enthusiasts. Today I'm here with a good friend, Luis, who speaks an accent that you may have never even heard about. It's called the Transatlantic or Mid-Atlantic accent. If you've ever seen movies made or set in the 1920s up to the 1940s, the actors were speaking in this way, Transatlantic. You can probably guess what that means. And it might be the kind of thing you'd kind of notice, but you couldn't really put your finger on what makes it sound that way. Or should I say, what makes it sound that way? Because they will aspirate their H's like that. And we're going to talk about what specific sounds you can pick up when you hear them. You'll even get to see what Luis's accent has to do with him wearing a green suit. Yes, green. Now, let's get on with the show. I'm Bianca, your personal American accent coach, and I'm here to help you master an American accent in English because your voice is your choice when it comes to how you sound. I try to release a podcast episode every 2 weeks, and so you should really subscribe to whatever podcast platform you use so that you don't miss the newest episode. And by the way, if you want to see the full video of the episode, it's available at Accent Coach Bianca on YouTube. Now, let's get on with the show. Here we are, and I'm so happy to get actually a friend on the podcast today. And I want to say, welcome, Luis. We're going to talk about the transatlantic accent. And first of all, maybe you can give a little intro about who you are.
Thank you for having me, Bianca. Well, I am Mexican. I'm a Mexican medical doctor. Actually, before med school, I went to law school, just in case someone is wondering. Anyway,
I didn't even know that about you. We're friends. I didn't even know that. That's great.
Almost nobody knows it. I did further studies in Germany, Switzerland, and Austria in terms of herbalary, juicing, fasting, meditation, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And that's what I do for a living. And I assess patients through a video call every single day at the clinic. And we have patients from all over the world. Mm-hmm. Actually, I had a patient from the US just 1 hour ago.
So you do this every day. And obviously the language which you're talking to your patients is probably generally English, right?
I would say 30 or 40% of my patients are from the US and most of them speak in English, right?
Okay, so 30 to 40%. And then what about the people that are not from the US? Are you generally speaking English with them or Spanish or if they're Mexican or what's usually the language of exchange?
Oh, Spanish.
Okay. Oh, very interesting. So how interesting, too. I want to point out for the listeners, too, that the name that you used, it starts with an H and it ends with a Y. Do you remember what it was? Herbalary, I believe, because it was the first time I've heard that word. Yeah.
I thought it was the right word to describe herbs. Isn't it?
Oh, it very well could be because, I mean, that's not my field, right? And it was the first time that I saw this and I thought, well, it must be the right word because I don't know what else it would be. You know, so I was thinking like, I'm sure you probably know. But here's the thing that I wanted to point out for everybody listening is that you pronounce the H, right? Herbs. You say it in the British manner, whereas most of us Americans would say herbs. And I just thought that was really interesting because it's exactly what we wanted to talk about today. We want to talk about the transatlantic accent. And one thing that is significant between British and American is where we enunciate or aspirate the H sounds, right? And so I thought, oh my God, we already have an example right here. And I wanted to just point that out for everyone who should be listening already. And I wanted to say like, oh, that's so interesting because there's all these phonological features about it and a little bit of prosody features about what we call the transatlantic accent. But let's talk about what the transatlantic accent is. And some people call it mid-Atlantic, but let's talk a little bit about what it is first and why it's so interesting for you, because let's actually back up too, because I wanted to say that the reason that we decided to do this podcast was because I was looking through Instagram the other day and I saw this post that said something about how people using the transatlantic accent in old movies, when they messed up their lines, like what did that look like? Because we have this association of British and by extension transatlantic for people who are very like prim and proper, right? And very distinguished and they don't make mistakes, right? And if they do, they don't acknowledge and they certainly don't swear. So I sent this post to you because I was watching people on stage and screen in black and white, and they were making these flubs with their lines, and half the time they would go, "Oh, nuts." And I just thought it was really funny. And then once in a while you would hear somebody say, "Oh, god damn it to hell," and they would just like really just start swearing, and it would just seem so counter-opposed. I thought it was hilarious, so I had to send it to you because we already know each other and you're the only person I know who is like, this is a really cool accent, right? We get to choose how we speak. This is how I want to speak. And there's reasons for that. So I thought, oh yeah, let's totally do a podcast episode. So a little background information. And now can you tell us, where did your love affair with this particular way of speaking, where did it begin? Tell us a little bit about that, if you don't mind.
It all started when I was 15 years old. Uh-huh. You see, my parents forced me, essentially, to watch a movie starring Cary Grant.
Oh, love Cary Grant. Uh-huh.
Me too, by the way. And the moment I saw him on the screen, I said, I want to be that guy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. As a 15-year-old teenage boy, you were like, exactly. This is me. This is what I want to be. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's my example to follow.
Uh-huh.
And I went down the rabbit hole and I realized that he was from Bristol, England. Mm-hmm. And then he moved to the United States. And I read his biography. I have watched all his motion pictures, mm-hmm. films, movies, mm-hmm. you name it. And I tried to impersonate him at some point in his mannerisms, movements,
mm-hmm.
many things. Nice. I even took dancing classes because he was quite a dancer.
No way.
Many, many, many things. Yes, that's true. Very, mm-hmm. very few people know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Did you know this? I don't know. You probably know this fun fact that he didn't have two front teeth. Cary Grant, he had kind of one. Yeah, I'm telling you, I was shocked when I heard this too. So you look at him smiling, and if you look really closely, the pictures are, he just has one front tooth. I'm not kidding. You have to like look really carefully. And once you see it, you can't unsee it. So it's hilarious because we have a friend in common, Dan, and Dan also loves, you know, old movies, and he loves Cary Grant as well. And he's the one who told me about it. So I swear, next time, look at a picture of Cary Grant smiling and then look at another one and look at another one. You're like, oh my goodness, he only has one front tooth. It's crazy. So yeah, I show you something, you tell me something, right? About Cary Grant.
Yeah, I didn't know that. But when I went through the rabbit hole, I realized that many, many movie stars from the golden age of cinema mm-hmm. will learn the transatlantic accent in order to mm-hmm. be friendlier with American audience, with a British audience, mm-hmm. and everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So I said, I should pick up this accent myself. I don't have it. I have mm-hmm. not nailed it, not yet. But I will. Eventually,
I will.
You'll see. Because I know I have a Hispanic accent. I need to get rid of it.
And what you mentioned earlier is really important for anybody in any language, right? It's really helpful, I should say, to have models, right? People I want to be like and speak like, right? So for me, in Spanish, I mean, it can be really confusing because if I listen to a podcast, I don't know if it's from Colombia. I don't know if I can kind of tell Argentina, right? In that area, I can tell Spain Spanish, right? I can tell the differences. But when you're learning a language and you have this onslaught, this mix of things, it can be really difficult to know how to say things. For example, a lot of people grew up learning British English in school, right? So they have little bits here, little bits there, you know, and it's this mix that we have. But to do something, how should we say? I want to put it in a way that is, it's more about being intentful, right? And we're raising your awareness and making choices. So I love the fact that you're like, here's a model. This is somebody I want to speak like. And I think we can do that in any language to point that out too. And it's such an interesting choice because like you said, it's kind of a bridge between British English and American English, right? And it's not like, oh, I'm all mixed up because I had all these different teachers and I don't even know the difference. It's very intentful, you know, which is what I like about it. So yeah, tell us a little bit more about your love affair, I would say, with the transatlantic accent.
Well, I got to tell you also that since I was on this journey of learning and improving my English skills, actually, my parents told me, you might as well just learn a sophisticated way to speak in English. I don't want to belittle anyone, but mm-hmm. some people who speak in English or mm-hmm. native English speakers have a lousy accent.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. Mm. I have a hard time understanding one or two of Americans, even British.
You said, well, yeah, because I think you're getting at comprehension, right? Comprehension is the main key. And tell me if I'm getting this right. There's even native speakers of English and British native speakers of English who sometimes you're not understanding what they say. Is that right?
Yes, right. Look, I have a hard time understanding Southern American speakers. They have such a thick accent. It sounds very weird to me.
It's hard to pick out the words. It's hard. Maybe
Yes.
the pace and the rhythm is different than what you're used to, right? So you already recognize, you're like, okay, there's people that I do want to speak like, and there's people I don't want to sound like. And the main purpose is clarity, right? And then you mentioned something else, sophistication. You said, I want to sound like this because it sounds really good to me. It sounds, I don't know. For you, sophistication, what does that mean for you? Does it mean intelligence? Does it mean kindness? Does it mean affluence? Like when you say sophistication, when you hear this accent, what are the things that come to your mind?
It has nothing to do with money.
Okay.
It is related to dignity, manners, respect, honor.
Very nice.
Essentially, that's it. I grew up in a very conservative house, and hence, I believe manners are quintessential in our lives, essential, crucial. And that's part of the sophistication in the way you speak and the way you address someone else. For instance, I can tell you that the Midwest accent sounds pretty good to me. I like it. I am not particularly very fond of the Californian accent. For some reason, it comes across as artificial, as
Oh, interesting.
plastic, as I don't like it.
It's so
Sounds
interesting.
awful.
So we're started talking about manners, right? And manners are usually their actions, right? They can be the words we choose. It can be how we speak to people. In some languages, it's about grammar too. Sometimes, for example, in Spanish, what form of the verb you use, if you use tú or usted, it can be so many different things. And then we also have this thing about prejudice and bias, positive or negative, right? How I feel about something. And I have a prejudice, positive or negative bias on the language itself, on how it is spoken. And then I'm connecting that with manners. And to me, that's a really interesting kind of Venn diagram. So it's not about just the actions I do to be polite. It's not just about the words that I choose, right? It's also about, for example, do I say a T sound, right? Do I say bath or do I say bath, for example? So it's interesting to me how those things can influence someone's perception, and how you're choosing to speak the accent. So it goes both ways, right? You're choosing to show this with the choices that you make in your words. And also, so you want to show somebody something. So you say words in a specific way, and how they receive it also can be interesting. So for example, we talked about the ah as in bath, right? I'm American. I generally say bath, right? There's another example, your R's, right? We call the American accent is what we call rhotic. And so we say our R's, like I'll say party, right? And you might say pa, like pa, potty, pa, potty. You might even enunciate that T or aspirate the T, right? So we
Absolutely.
have rhotic versus non-rhotic, right? We have certain vowels. For example, if you were going to negate something and you said the word N-O-T, your vowel in there might sound a little bit different than mine, right? You might round your lips more than I would. For example, you might say not rather than I would say not, for example, right? So to me, the phonological choices and how they're related to perceptions and what you said, like comportment maybe is really interesting to me, and I think you mentioned you had a couple of stories as well about like because of this, what interactions have happened to you where it seemed like, oh, this reaction might be because of accent, right? I think you told me about something about a car dealership or something like that. What was that story about?
Yes, I have many, many stories I can tell you. For instance, about 6 months ago, I go back and forth to the US because I'm the CEO of a natural supplements business based in Texas.
Great.
Anyway, I went to San Antonio and I went to the car dealership. And there was this lady, she was probably 75 years old. Anyway, I approached the front desk and I tried with my best English, and I want to rent a car. And she went, oh, excuse me, where are you from? And I replied, well, I'm from Mexico. Well, you don't come across as the typical Mexican man. May I see your passport? Yes, of course. She didn't buy it, face
She
value.
didn't believe you're a Mexican.
She didn't buy it. And after talking for, say, 3 or 4 minutes, she went, oh, I like your accent very much. I'm sure you're taking classes. Yes, indeed. And after that, I mean, I asked for the cheapest or the most affordable car. And she had a couple of cars available. And eventually she told me, you know what? You're such a lovely man. I want to give you an SUV. Just
Oh.
yes.
Upgrade.
She upgraded my car just because I guess she liked me.
Right, yeah, she had an interesting connection with you. I think, like, yeah, how we interact with other people, and like you said, how we treat people too, and you're making a connection between those two that can result in some positive interactions too. That's hilarious. You got the upgrade just literally for speaking.
Also, I have to tell you that about 17 months ago, I went to Los Angeles to give a speech, to give a conference in terms of health, nutrition, lifestyle, many things. Anyway, that evening I went to the Cicada Club. Do you know it?
I don't know it, no.
It's the most beautiful, mesmerizing bar in the world.
Oh,
They
nice.
yes, it's true. They have live music and they have swing dancers, and it's fun, so much fun. So I saw this beautiful girl and I asked her to dance with me. She had no idea how to dance. She well,
Stepping
anyway,
over your toes.
many times, but it was fun. It turns out that she was a librarian. Anyway, she loves classical movies, and we started to talk for many,
Nice.
many, well, for 2 hours or so.
Nice.
And after that, we dated for about 2 or 3 months.
Oh, nice.
And it was all because I called her, you know what? I like Cary Grant very much. And she opened her eyes very much. She loved it.
Oh, that is great. Yes. Shared interest, right? And then from that, something grows from that too. And I'm sure if she is into older movies too, even if it was unconscious or subconscious, like she was picking up on the way that you speak. And I bet that that contributed to some kind of attraction there. That's my guess, anyways. Not that you're not attractive, anyways, you know, not that there's any other reason, but I think that's so interesting. And also, just a side note too, you said another word that like we mentioned before, bath, I say bath. I also say dance. And you said dance, right? She danced, which is exactly transatlantic, right? Because they take those A sounds and they make them more back in the mouth and open. The jaw is very open, right? So I know at one point you learned it, you studied it, but now it's so natural that you might not notice these things. So I want to point it out to you and to the audience. Right? Especially these A sounds, you can always pick out the British versus American for a few things, right? The R's or the absence or the presence of the R's. But number one, vowels. If we pay really close attention to the vowels also, then we can see, oh, is it British or is it US? Because mostly we don't use the transatlantic accent these days, and nobody's born with it. I mean, nobody's born with any accent necessarily. But yeah, just to point that out too, if you listen very carefully, you can hear those little things. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. As far as I know, the transatlantic accent is not indigenous to any location.
It was created. It was artificial, right? It was
Yes.
created for stage and screen back in, well, late 19th century, early 20th century. So when was it kind of at its height between the 20s and the 40s? So we could say about 100 years ago, this started coming into fashion. And because of the media, because like you said, the golden age of television, this was something where kind of, I guess the two sides of the Atlantic could kind of meet, you know? So a lot of stage productions were done in a transatlantic accent. A lot of newscasters, remember radio was a big thing back then. Newscasters also would learn this. We can maybe call it a dialect. It's certainly an accent, but there might be also vocabulary in there, so it might be creeping towards a dialect. But newscasters, stage and screen performers, right? Some singers as well. And even there was this book, very famous book called Speak with Distinction by Edith Skinner. It was like the cornerstone for years and years. It's still really popular, but it would say, you know, to speak with a for good American speech, quotes, I'm doing air quotes for people who are listening to this and not watching it on YouTube, but air quotes, good American speech at that time was something of a mix, right? So as you said earlier, this was something that people wanted to, how should we say, it was aspirational, right? I want to look a certain way. I want to be viewed as a polite, respectful person. And speech was, of course, part of that, as it always has been, right? There's always been some kind of hierarchy about these things. But this is a huge, huge part of American history and a British overlap here, which it's kind of funny because in the 40s, it started to kind of drop back down again, you know? But I love that you're really into it. And I kind of wish that more people were, you know, it'd be so cool to revive this as an accent.
I have watched all the movies starring Fred Astaire, for instance, Katharine Hepburn,
yeah,
Audrey Hepburn. I mean, all the stars, Errol Flynn, for instance.
Oh, of course. Yeah, yeah. It was a thing. Yeah, they had to, let's say, to be on that level of acting or whatever, it was something they had to learn. It was a skill, you know, that people had to learn. Absolutely.
If I may take the example to the extreme, mm-hmm. I'm going to give it to your audience.
Yeah.
Would you like to speak like Marlon Brando or like Cary Grant?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Brando had such an awful, lousy pronunciation. I can tell, even though it is not my first language, I can tell. Mm-hmm. Whereas Cary Grant, Rock Hudson, and many others had a beautiful, perfect, neat, clean accent.
And yet, yes, absolutely. And yet, also, Marlon Brando had a certain, how should we say, his accent
Suave.
Was part of his identity, right? Imagine if Marlon Brando and his friends, who all talk in the same way, imagine if somebody comes into their group speaking a posh, let's say a transatlantic accent, which was posh at the time, they're going to get beat up by Marlon Brando and his buddies. You know, so I think it's partly its identity. It's partly like who you're around. You know, and I think that's something that we can explore too, like identity. Do you ever feel, getting back to the stories, has anyone said to you, "Oh my God, you sound so fake," you don't sound Mexican at all? Has that ever challenged your sense of identity, or has it strengthened it? For example,
it has strengthened it because I mean, you can define your identity. I believe so. Look, I am Mexican, but my ancestors are from all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't represent the stereotypical man from this country. But if I were to travel to Italy or to France or Spain or whatever, I wouldn't be the stereotypical Italian man or French man.
Right,
really.
Right.
I create my own identity and it boosts my confidence, my self-esteem. I love it.
And as well you should. So often I meet people who they'll say, you know, I'm just not comfortable in my second language. I don't feel like me in my second language. And you own it. Like, you're like, this is me. This is who I am. And I've done this on purpose, which is very different than, since we mentioned Europe, right? When you go to Europe and people are working in an international, let's say, business or office, then yeah, everybody has a different accent. Great. Fantastic. They all understand each other, you know, or that's the goal anyways. But often it's not intentional, right? It's just because, oh, I picked up this and I've never really thought about it, right? And that's totally fine. But to me, because of what I do, I guess I really admire when somebody goes really headfirst into it and somebody who's interested and somebody who can really like get into the weeds, you know, or like you said, go down the rabbit hole of all of these things. So it's not just identity too. Well, maybe identity is related to interest, right? Because I'm really interested in this, that's also kind of part of my identity. You know, for me too, I'm a word nerd. I love these things. So for me, I can identify with that too as part of identity, if that makes sense.
I would say fake it until you make it.
How you learn, right?
Yes,
yeah.
You can be whomever you want to be. Just take the risks and go for it.
Exactly. And don't worry what other people are saying, too. I think a lot of people are, you know, they're worried that like, oh, I want to sound like this, but I'm afraid what other people will say to me. Right. And so I don't know if you've had any negative comments or anything like that. Not that that's your problem. That's obviously their problem about what they're saying. But just to let people know that, like, yes, it's a choice. Like, your voice is your choice.
Actually, not a single time someone has ever told me that they don't like my accent or that I sound completely fake. They have actually encouraged me.
How
In
interesting.
Britain, in Europe, in England, in Canada, they have told me, you know what? Kudos to you for trying to improve. And Plato in Greek said that if you see someone trying to improve themselves, cheer them up. Instead of humiliating them, if you just try to help them, support them.
Yeah,
That.
totally. Because a lot of people, well, and let's be fair too, a lot of people don't even realize that it's a choice, right? A lot of people, they're just like, oh, I speak how I speak, right? But in fact, I can break those things down, like we just said, R's, vowels. Oh, another thing that happens a lot in the transatlantic accent is, so we can say it's American that moves towards British. Well, don't forget that it's British that moves towards American too, and we kind of meet in the middle. For example, if we take the letter L, right? Many accents in the UK, they might say girl, girl. You said you met a girl, right? And you went dancing. Girl, la 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 la, or ol. In American English, we actually have two L's. So we have a regular L, which is like la 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 la. In this case, it's going to be what we call a dark L. So it's the back of my tongue, girl. It's the back of my tongue. But in British English, you have what's called vocalization of an L. So vocal, meaning vowel, and L comes to a vowel. So they take their lips and they round it, and it's kind of like a W, girl, girl, right? So they're going to round their lips. So British English will take an L. And they'll make it more like a vowel or semi-vowel, in this case, a W, right? So girl, girl. And they've got some rounding of the lips. That's what the British will do, or many accents in British English. And you can see that come into transatlantic accent. You don't do that in transatlantic accent. An L is an L, right? An L is an L. Whereas, like we said earlier, an R, for me, Americans, an R is an R. But nope, meeting in the middle. R's, we drop our R's, but we do say our L's in a transatlantic accent or mid-Atlantic accent. So you see what I mean? How it's like coming together, and it's something you choose to do on purpose, and it's something you choose to kind of study and break apart. And anyone can do that with any accent. And that's what I think is like the most beautiful thing of all this, you know?
Yes, you can create your own personality, your identity, your style. And I believe in being myself. I mean, I took Cary Grant as an example, but just as means of following someone at some point. But eventually down the road, I picked my own
Yeah,
accent, my own
exactly.
personality.
But that's how we have to
Also,
start, I would say.
yes, yeah, I'm actually going through the International Phonetic Alphabet right now.
The IPA, one of my good friends, IPA, not the beer. Although I do like a beer. And you and I went to, I think we went to a bar once for like a business group thing, like a meetup kind of thing. So next time we go, we're gonna have to have like two IPAs and be like, cheers to the real IPA, the International Phonetic Alphabet.
It's a lovely, lovely document to go through, although it's
Exactly.
quite challenging for a non-native English speaker like me. But I like it.
Oh, me too. When people say to me, hey, do I need to know the IPA? Because it's a lot. Like you said, it's very challenging to go through. There's symbols and you have to understand charts and you have to understand things. And my response is usually, you know what? Pick up what's useful to you when it becomes useful. And if you fall in love with it, it's not going to matter because you're going to want to learn more, you know? And so I don't think anybody, what I'm saying is for people who are listening, like, don't be like, oh my God, Luis said I should study the IPA, so I'm going to go do it now. It might be a little overwhelming for people, but if you just pick up a symbol here or a symbol there, for example, when you said actually, I would say actually, and I think you said actually, right? Ah versus ah. Those are two different symbols because they're two different sounds. So if your ear picks up on that, what I'm saying is you don't need to study the whole IPA. Just start picking symbols here and symbols there and be interested. Look at the dictionary. It's right there. You know, we can figure out these things as you go, if that makes sense, right?
It does. It does make sense. Yes.
Cool. So we were talking about lately accents and identity, but I'm going to bring these things all the way back around to where we started from. And because, like, I know you. We're talking about language and accent and identity together, but we started out picking out a word called, I think, I forget if it was herbology or herbalary. There was a word there, and that's what got us started. And you said, oh, I'm a doctor and I studied as a lawyer. So let's come back to that. And to kind of wrap things up a little bit, tell us a little bit about where people can find you if they're interested in reaching out. And because there's something else that you haven't mentioned yet that I think is also part of your work.
Yes, I'm the CEO of this company, and we sell collagen with coffee, which is.
So it's coffee. And do you say collagen or collagen? Because this is another interesting nerdy word point. Do you say collagen or collagen? Because I'm here to tell you it's correct for both, but I'm just curious.
I usually say collagen.
Collagen. Isn't this interesting? Because if you look in the dictionary, right? I'm a native speaker, and my whole life I said collagen. Well, I don't know when I started saying this word, but since I knew about it, I was saying, ah, collagen, collagen. And one of my students once said collagen, and I nearly corrected them, and I thought, I gotta look this up because I've heard both before. And I looked it up in the dictionary, and sure enough, me, the native speaker, I'm saying the one that's less common, right? So I just thought this was interesting because here we're talking about this whole other thing, but we can find these interesting little word snippets and these sounds kind of everywhere if we're looking for them. Do you know what I mean? So, okay,
Yes.
tell us again the name of the company, what it is, because I cut you off there a little bit, and where we can find you.
Well, if I may share my phone number,
Please.
my American phone number is 210-204-6723. This
Say
is
that
my.
again for people who are listening, because it's a little bit fast when you're listening.
It's 210-204-6723.
Okay, cool. And that's something that people can WhatsApp on or just give you
They
a call
can.
and say, hey, Luis, I'd love to chat about this.
Absolutely. It will be my pleasure.
Oh, very
And they
nice.
can find my product, which is Coffeeligen.
Coffeeligen. Oh, very nice. Speaking of information, maybe in the show notes we'll put the IPA for that for people who can read IPA.
Yes. I mean, I have many, many stories. And I have read many books in English. I'm learning words every single day in English, I mean.
Good point. Good point. And
It
when
helps a
you
lot.
learn a word, what's your process? Can you quickly tell us, is it something usually you listen to and you're like, oh, I'm gonna listen to that a bunch of times? Or is it something you're reading and you're thinking, let me stop in the dictionary? Or do you just let it flow and see how many times you encounter this word? Like, how do you pick up new vocabulary? What's your process? That's my question.
Every single time I come across into a new word when I'm reading, I write it down and eventually I look into the dictionary. And I have my, if I may bring a sheet, I have, you see, I cheat.
That's enormous. That it's more of a poster than anything else. So it's we could, oh my God, we could say it's a notebook, but on you could probably put it on the whole wall, I imagine.
I have eight of this.
Oh my gosh. So you pick up the words, you eventually look them up, and then when they're important enough, they make it on the paper, basically, like a
Exactly.
poster, we could say.
Very few people know the difference between a groundsman and a gardener, for instance.
Ooh, okay.
A different same,
Yeah,
yeah, different meaning.
subtle meaning. And for you, what's the difference? Because I'm presuming this is something that made it onto the poster recently.
No. I learned it about 2 years ago.
Because it was a quick example. I was kind of surprised because you just picked up this word out of nowhere, and so I thought it was recent, but it's not.
No, I have many, many examples. A gardener is a more skilled or a more sophisticated job than just a groundsman. That's the thing.
So a groundsman might just water, let's say, and the gardener would maybe prune the trees or know the species, let's say. That could be the
Exactly.
difference in the meaning.
Exactly. The gardener usually knows which mineral is useful for every plant, how much water they need, where should it be plant. And all these details.
Whereas the groundsman just kind of does his job and probably does what the gardener tells him to do more than anything, is my guess.
Essentially, yes.
Oh, that makes sense too. Well, I would say I don't want to keep you all day, Luis, but you are an inspiration. You are also, I would say, a model for other people too. Also with, I would even say with your courage to be like, hey, I don't care if it's not the popular accent. I don't care if this accent's 100 years old. I love it. I want to speak this way because I think it's important and it represents something about my identity and almost, I would say, values or ideals, you know, and that's so important to share with people too. And the most profound thing, I think, is just to tell people that you can do this too. You can take charge of how you speak. Not only that, but you can have multiple accents. You can take them off and put them on just like a jacket. Because let's face it, that's how this transatlantic accent started, right? Nobody grew up with it. They had to be taught. They went to school. They learned enunciation and articulation. And when they were off stage, they probably didn't speak like that, right? Maybe they were Cary Grant on stage and they were Marlon Brando off stage. We don't always know. So I think it's so interesting to find someone like you to talk about this stuff too.
Although I have to tell you that I sometimes go to high-end networking events in the US.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, because I know this as a fact, they usually treat you the way you address them and the way you dress up. They're very respectful, all of them. But they give you more time to talk to them. If you have a good accent, if you treat them well, if you dress up the right way, you see what I'm telling you? If I were to show up wearing a swimsuit, I am most likely they won't listen to me.
Oh, not even look at you, probably, in a swimsuit or a tracksuit, maybe. Yeah, in a networking
event. It makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes sense. And if I were to show up with a waistcoat, vest,
Yeah.
Or with, a nice tie or whatever, I am sure they would give me 2 minutes to talk to them. So also your accent or the way you pronounce vowels, consonants should be into consideration because the moment you're meeting someone else.
I never really thought about it that way. It's like when we dress for an event, right? We're looking to impress, right? Generally, we dress to impress at a networking event or something like this. And we often think about how we speak, but usually it might be vocabulary, right? Or I shouldn't say it too many times. Like things like this generally pop into our mind, but it's almost like the way you're describing it, it makes me think like my voice is kind of like a suit that I wear on the outside, or it's like the suit that I bring out of my mouth, if that makes sense. And maybe I'm just visualizing it in a funny way, but that's what I get the sense of the way you describe it.
I gotta tell you, I was able to flirt with a girl because that day I was wearing my favorite green suit. It's a lovely, beautiful, handmade or handcrafted suit in Norway.
Ah.
And she came to me. I didn't approach her.
Yeah,
she loved it, and she approached me, and she told me, "You know what? I love your suit. It's beautiful." And I won't say any more. I'll be respectful.
It's a family show. No, I'm just kidding. But I feel like you know the way that people react to us is it can be really important to us. So you've just talked about like one way where I just got this upgrade, right? And you said you have many many stories about this thing. So yeah, often we think of clothing or something like that, but it can also be the way we speak can attract people, you know, or seal a deal, repel people. So. All backing up too. Am I clear? Are people understanding the words that are coming out of my mouth, right? And if that's not happening, nothing else can happen after that. So thinking about communication first, I would say, and then what you're describing is a whole different layer of what I'm communicating. I'm communicating respect. I'm communicating this or that, or I'm communicating that, hey, I am worth your time, you know, or hey, I'm an intriguing person, right? You don't know anything about me except how I speak, right? And so I think that's all super interesting. And a lot of us don't think about that. And this is a really special case because like we said, it's not an accent that anybody speaks naturally, right? People don't raise their children to speak transatlantic. Or maybe you would have a partner and then you would raise your children to speak this way in the land of Luis. This is how we speak, right?
Yes.
Like, that could be the case. Yeah.
I would encourage your audience to pick up the accent they want. For instance, if they like the Boston accent, go for it. I like it. I truly like it. The New York accent. It's challenging for me, but I like it.
The diversity is key. Like we're losing a lot of accent diversity simply because, not because it's not understood, but because it's not fashionable, let's say, or something like that. You know, for example, the name of the product you were showing us is We would say, I would say, you also say, aw, coffee, aw. But in Boston, they say, ka, coffee, very likely, right? Or New York, like you said, right? So all these little things that you can pick up on, I think, add to our diversity. And you don't have to be all one or all the other. You know, a lot of people think, oh my God, I have to sound like a native, or I have to sound like an American. No, you don't. You have to be A, comprehensible, and B, you have to figure out what you want to sound like, you know, and pick and choose, because it's a buffet, right? It's not a takeout in or drive-through or anything like that. You get to decide all the sounds, right? And we haven't even talked about intonation or anything like that. Maybe that'll be like a second episode that you and I do together, you know?
That would be fun.
Oh, that would be super fun. Yes. I want to say thank you, Luis, for coming today and sharing with the audience like what this experience has been like for you, where it came from, right? What does that even mean? And also sharing some stories today, because it's always really interesting and it's super rare that I get to talk to somebody with a transatlantic accent, you know? So I want to say thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Awesome. Awesome. And thank you guys for listening today, and we will see you in the next episode. So thanks a lot, guys. Bye. And thanks for listening all the way to the end, everybody. I'm serious when I say that this accent really should come back into fashion. I'm really loving saying what and where. And if you heard the episode of me talking to Haley about the prequel to Yellowstone called 1883, that's exactly how Elsa, the main character, says her question words as well. I love how once you pay attention to these little details, you see them everywhere, like Cary Grant's teeth, or tooth, I should say. And if you stay until the end, you know I like to tell you a little story about what's going on in my life. And today I'm super excited because I'm finally getting a haircut. I love getting my haircut, and it grows so fast I have to go pretty often, which is kind of a pain, but I do love it. But you probably know I do love to put color in my hair, sometimes pink or purple. But right now I can't because I'm house sitting, and this house has a pool, and I'm going swimming basically every day. So the color would just wash right out of it, which is a shame because it's quite expensive. So no color for me right now. We'll have to wait until I'm done house sitting, which will be probably in June. We're recording right now in May, so it should be another month or so. Maybe then I'll put some color back into my hair. But let's see what it looks like in the next episode. See you then, guys.